Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Middle is supported by Journalism Funding Partners, a nonprofit organization striving to increase the sustainability of local journalism by building connections between donors and news organizations. More information on how you can support The Middle at listentothemiddle.com. Welcome to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson, joined as always by our house DJ Tolliver. Hey, Tolliver.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And you know, it has been a little over 4 years since the world shut down because of COVID-19. Do you remember the moment when you realized how life-changing of a virus this was going to be?
Yeah, it was actually after I attended my first Zoom comedy show. Because nothing will make you miss people than a bad Zoom comedy show.
Yeah,
terrible.
I do remember a lot of things on Zoom that, I hadn't even heard of Zoom before the pandemic. And then there we were, and here we are. Mm-hmm. So at this point, a lot of us, of course, would like to forget that the pandemic happened. But what we want to know from you, if you're listening, is are you still feeling its effects, whether that's economic, mental, or physical health, or in another way? That is our question this hour, and our number is 844-4-MIDDLE. That is 844-464-3353. We're going to get to your calls in a moment. But first, last week, we asked whether or not marijuana legalization is working. A lot of calls from a lot of different sides on this issue. Take a listen to some of the voicemails that came in.
Hi, my name is Jane. I live in Ada, Michigan.
Hi, my name is Richard, and I'm calling from Alaska.
Hi, my name is Tina from Chicago, Illinois.
Hi, this is Bill in Palmetto, Florida. I think that just like with alcohol, education is the key. I think we need to be educating our children as far as alcohol and marijuana usage.
The marijuana issue in Michigan in schools is out of control completely. When I spoke to a high school principal recently, he said he thought about 50% of students were hooked on mostly vaping and weed pens.
Over the last few years, they legalized it specifically in Anchorage. And I know multiple growers who quit because of the legalization.
I have Crohn's disease. I'm thrilled to have legal, safe access to marijuana now. It's been a great drug for that disease.
Well, thanks to everyone who called and wrote in. So this hour, we're asking, how are you still feeling the effects of COVID-19? It has been 4 years since a once-in-a-century pandemic brought the world to a standstill. More than a million Americans died. Obviously, schools and businesses closed, and we were all isolated from one another. So now, 4 years later, while you may not notice the acute effects like you used to, we are still living with many of the after effects. Grocery bills are more than 25% higher than they were pre-pandemic. Oof. Trying to buy a house or renting is much more expensive. COVID has changed the way we talk and interact with one another. It has deepened our political divisions. And of course, there are people dealing with long COVID and mental health challenges as well. So we want to know how it's playing out in your life. Tolliver, how can people reach us?
You can call us at 844-4-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also email us at listentothemiddle.com.
Let's meet our panel. Diane Swank is chief economist economist at KPMG US and is one of the nation's top economic analysts and an old friend. She's in Evanston, Illinois. Diane, welcome to The Middle.
It's great to be here. It's good to hear you again, too, Jeremy.
It's great to hear you as well. And Dr. Richard Friedman is with us. He's a psychiatrist and director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York. Richard, welcome to The Middle.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, and you co-wrote a piece in The Atlantic magazine about how we all have unprocessed COVID grief. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that we faced a life-threatening traumatic event during COVID in which more than a million Americans were killed. And though most of us feel right now that COVID is over, psychologically, it takes time to deal with a threat, with a trauma that is represented by COVID. And many of us are not quite over it yet. And what we mean by this is there are many, many Americans who are unhappy and anxious and depressed and just in a plain funk now. And pundits and economists are scratching their heads trying to understand why are Americans in such a sour mood? Well, one possible explanation is unprocessed grief and, you know, traumatic memory related to COVID.
And yet we don't want to think about it.
Well, it's understandable. Nobody wants to pay attention to things that are painful. It's adaptive to forget things. But on the other hand, in a sense, if you can't remember them, you can't forget them.
Diane, back in 2020, you predicted that the economic impact of COVID-19 would outlast the outbreak of COVID-19. How do you see that playing out now?
Well, it's playing out in more ways than I ever wanted it to play out. That is for sure. You know, it feels kind of like at the time when COVID hit, I was reassured by one thing, and that was that we wouldn't let COVID be the iceberg. We got lifeboats in the water with supplies to make sure that people had some way to traverse those COVID-tainted waters. And that was really important. The side effect of that, unfortunately, was on the other side, as we emerged out of COVID and we reopened the economy, there was that frictions upon reentry, and we had a lot of demand, a lot of pent-up demand. We had saved a lot of money, both from the COVID stimulus and all the money the government spent to make sure that we didn't sink in that COVID waters, as many sunk in it. And I think that was important in an economic sense, but it also left us with this residual inflation that we're still struggling with today. And, you know, in some ways, you know, we'd all like 2019 prices and 2024 wages. That's not going to happen. But, you know, the reality is out there, you know, that we had, you noted it earlier, 50% increase since 2019 in home values, 30% increase in rents. Wages on average across the country went up 17.6%. So that disparity, that difference, it can be felt. And even though we saw increases in savings and wealth and wages across income strata in ways that we never had before, inequality still intensified, even though those increases came. And so I think there's a real sense, too, of, you know, taking a worker that was once considered non-essential, making them essential. Their wages being leveled up. Remember essential workers, those frontline workers at the beginning of COVID? Their wages were leveled up and they had their moment in the sun from the shadows of this economy only to be burned by inflation. And I think that's what the real challenge is today.
Well, and Richard, inflation has turned into such a huge issue in our politics right now that it could be the deciding thing in this presidential race, which has so many other things going on. But if you think about inflation as at its core, whether because of the pandemic or the response to the pandemic and its after effects are what are going to decide maybe this presidential election.
Yes. People's emotional response. And also, as Diana is saying, I mean, their lived reality of their economic circumstance. If they have to go out and they realize that their purchasing power is so much less than it was, let's say, 1 or 2 years ago. And yet, you know, there's a disconnect because, you know, many people are on air telling Americans that the economy is really not that bad, that unemployment rates are low, that wages have gone up, you know, at least as fast as prices. And so it's confusing to people because their actual reality and what they're hearing from experts don't match.
Let's get to the phones. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Diane.
Well, you know, I just want to dovetail on that because I think Richard makes a really important point, which I'm always trying to struggle with. You know, we've gone through now 26 months, and likely next week we'll see 27 months of unemployment less than 4%, the longest span since the height of the Vietnam War in the late 1960s. That's great. It's great that people have a job. 100% of people, though, feel inflation. A small percentage, and this is the sad part of statistics, only a small percentage feel a rise in unemployment. And so I think that's the reality is that even though on average wages are now outpacing inflation again, that's good news. But we came out of a decade after the great financial crisis and the great recession where wages stagnated. So again, you get this sort of sense of relativity that you got a moment to think you're doing better and you maybe only needed one job. Now, multiple job holders are a sign of the economy getting better instead of a sign of, you know, the economy getting worse. In the 1990s, it wasn't like that. You didn't need to have, as the economy improved, we actually had a narrow window in time where inequality in the United States narrowed in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And people didn't need those multiple jobs. Now you do.
Let's get to Fahima, who's calling from Milton, Massachusetts. Fahima, welcome to the middle. How are you still feeling COVID?
I actually feel great. Me personally, I'm really grateful that no one I know died or anything really bad to them, happened to them. So I'm feeling That's grateful. Good. But my son, Nathaniel, he hates gym class. And his gym teacher is really nice. He's super, just a very friendly guy. And I was like, why do you hate gym class? That your coach is so nice. You like your coach. You like your teacher. They call him Coach C, I think. And he says, because people touch me, and you're not supposed to touch strangers or people you don't know because they'll get you sick with germs. And it just hit me how much that affected him during the worst of the pandemic.
I have to say, I noticed going back to my own high school late in the pandemic, maybe a year ago or so, and how many people there were still, the students were still so concerned that they were wearing masks, even after many people, many adults in a lot of places around the country had stopped doing that. Fahima, thank you very much for that call. Tolliver, I know that we're getting comments in online as well.
Yeah, Becky in Minnesota says, yes, COVID still impacts our lives. My 14-year-old has been in treatment for long COVID, which she got in April of 21. She started treatment in Mayo in December of 21 and is still in treatment. Every day it impacts her life.
Wow.
Her lungs and body have not recovered yet.
You know, one of the big issues, as we said, in this year's presidential election could be the higher cost of everything, the inflation that came out of the pandemic and the response to the pandemic.
Yeah, and it's not the first time inflation has been used as a campaign issue. Listen here to Ronald Reagan as he campaigned against Jimmy Carter in the 1980 election.
This idea that has been spawned here in our country that inflation somehow came upon us like a plague and therefore it's uncontrollable and no one can do anything about it is entirely spurious, and it's dangerous to say this to the people. When Mr. Carter became president, inflation was 4.8%, as you said. It had been cut in two by President Gerald Ford. It is now running at 12.7%.
And by the way, Tolliver, his slogan in 1980, Ronald Reagan's slogan in 1980, was also "Make America Great Again."
Oh.
This is very interesting how that inflation, "Make America Great Again," the two things that keep come up again
historian.
And again. We'll be right back with more of your calls on The Middle.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show. We're focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. This hour, we're asking you, are you still feeling the effects of the COVID pandemic? That could be in your health, your work life, your relationships, anything. Tolliver, what's the number to call in?
It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also write to us at listentothemiddle.com or on social media.
I'm joined by Diane Swank, chief economist at KPMG US, and Dr. Richard Friedman, director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine. And before we go back to the phones, Diane, what about what it has done to people's work life? So many people still working remote in this country, something that really wasn't happening near on this scale before the pandemic. And I noticed that when it comes to office occupancy in cities, on the busiest days of the week, they are just 62% right now of what they were on average in February 2020, which obviously has a huge impact on real estate.
Absolutely. You know, the number of what's really been interesting, Nick Bloom and Steve Davis, University of Chicago, Stanford University, they've been studying work from home and hybrid work kind of schedules, 4 days a week for over 20 years. And they started in May of 2020 surveying over 5,000 Americans on their work. And we've got this continuous study that's gone on since then in terms of, and it's really just blossomed into a whole field of understanding all the different time ways people work. And at first, people, when they pivoted online, about a third of the time that they saved from commuting, they actually committed to their jobs. And so they were working more and giving more time to their jobs. The other two-thirds that they weren't commuting, they were spending more time, free time with their family or walking their dogs or being able to run their errands, but being able to live their life in whatever way they wanted. Now what we've seen is we sort of leveled out since 2022. We have not seen a change in sort of the hybrid work from home, the number of people who are not always in the office, maybe in the office some days. Mm-hmm. The key is to be in the office the same time the people you want to see are in the office, but it's no longer, you know, all the time. And there's this sort of leveling off, and it's not shifting, and it's not shifted in 2 years now. And I think that's really important to see because it's made, in one way, the labor market much more open to many more people, particularly for women, highly educated women with small children who have childcare problems, and we're in a childcare crisis, a care crisis more broadly in this country. College-educated women drove labor force participation back to a record high after a 20-year hiatus. When I was first driving the labor force participation mm-hmm. for women having children to a record high in 2000, it took us over 20 years to get there again. But then on the other side of it, those people who don't have that flexibility, women are working 1 hour less than they were in 2019. So women of color and people who have a high school degree or less were penalized by that and are not participating as much.
Let's go to the phones and Joanna, who's in Provo, Utah. Joanna, welcome to The Middle. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, so when COVID hit, I had been at university for a year and a half, and I took a break, and I'm still back at university now. And so the whole lens of COVID is something that I've seen as a university student. And something that I think we're still experiencing, at least in Utah and from what I've seen, is that the curriculum kind of weakened during COVID, and understandably so, as a way to let students know that it was okay to be struggling, it was okay to be sick, and things were going to be a little bit easier for a second because everyone was dealing with COVID. But I had to pick back up in terms of speed, in terms of volume of material that we've been given to study, and it just seems as though COVID has still been affecting us as far as the level of education that we're receiving and the expectations that are on the shoulders of students and professors alike.
Joanna, thank you very much for that. Richard Friedman, you're obviously on a campus there. What? How do you see this playing out in education? I tend to think that the people who were in school at any level during the pandemic must have had one of the hardest experiences and maybe are still feeling the effects of it now.
Oh, I think that the effects on education in the United States from COVID were profound. I mean, in secondary school, kids lost and may never retrieve their learning. Kids who were in, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade are way behind in learning language and mathematics and may never be able to keep up. I mean, I work in a medical college, and, you know, the impact on education was really adverse because, you know, the social and emotional environment and learning when you're there in a classroom interacting with people is really different, I think, than, you know, virtual learning, where, you know, you're looking at a tile and you're talking one-on-one. You don't have the same kind of, you don't have the kind of social beehive phenomenon, and the social connection is gone in virtual
space. So if we were to go through another pandemic right now, Richard Friedman, what would you suggest happen? Should the students just go into the classroom? I mean, there were obviously real fears about spreading the virus around, but it seems like what did happen was not a recipe for the future.
Well, I think each one of these kinds of pandemics has to be taken on its own. I mean, we did the best we could with the available data and science we had. I think looking back, hindsight is always perfect. You can say, you know, we made terrible decisions because the risk was actually lower than we thought it was. I mean, the risk for young people was much, much smaller. Most of the mortality from COVID occurred in people who are 65 and older. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't have known that at the time. And there were people who were highly critical in the absence of having any data whatsoever. So people erred on the side of safety, which is completely understandable.
We've got a caller actually with an education background. Leela in Chicago joins us. Leela, go ahead.
What I see in my line of work is we have a lot more students with anxiety, kind of generalized anxiety, afraid to do things more independently, whether it's their work or mostly like work and classwork and homework. And we're also seeing in younger kids difficulty with following the group plan and being part of a group and needing more, wanting more individualized attention.
How are you dealing with that now, 4 years after the start of the pandemic?
Well, I think we're trying to provide as much, social emotional support in the school as we can, and just, working with students in like a social group kind of curriculum, like how do we talk, how do we stay together with the plan? What is our plan? You know, how can we work together cooperatively and meet our needs as a group, but also work towards individual needs?
Leela, thank you. Diane Swank, your thoughts on that issue in the education system, but also probably in the workplace? There got to be social differences now versus several years ago, pre-pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the education and the workplace, we see anxiety. In fact, in every single one of our offices now, we actually have mental health people on staff on site. One, because people need the extra help and the support. And we're in a mental health crisis, which I'm sure Richard could attest to, but it's really hard for a lot of our people to get access to the mental health professionals that they need to get access to. And in fact, when we saw after the big hiring frenzy that occurred, as things started to slow down and people started to stay in one place, they started to use their benefits more. And one of the parts of their benefits that really shot up was, of course, their use of their mental health care benefits. And it's good that they had those benefits, but trying to even find, we've actually had to sort of help them source to find mental health professionals to match them up with those people. And that is a real shift. I mean, I spend a lot of time, I've got a team that I came into that was hired. Most of them that came with me knew me in the office. And then those that I joined are a team that were hired all across the country during COVID. And we've never worked in the same office together. And so I spent a lot of time talking with them and supporting them as well. And, you know, what does it mean? You know, a lot of times I try to not spend time on screen as I'm not with mm-hmm. you right now, but I actually get on the phone because people have forgotten how to use the phone.
Yes.
And I go and walk with them and talk with them. And, you know, we work on brainstorming together and you try to find all these different creative ways to connect with a person that isn't just with this odd right. little box in front of you.
Yeah. Actually, I called a friend today and he told me that I'm the only person besides his mom that he has voice calls with.
I actually started practicing talking on the phone again. It's wild.
People are writing in on social media. What do they say?
Yeah, Laura writes, I was in grad school when COVID hit. I got sick in March 2020, very early in the pandemic before testing, way before vaccines. I was very sick for 62 days. I missed multiple semesters and I'm just now getting back into my research. Yeah, where I left off that first March. I had to pay extra money now to retake classes I already completed. 4 years.
Let's go to Jordan, who's in Lake Forest, Illinois. Jordan, welcome to the middle. How are you still feeling the effects of COVID?
Hi. So firstly, I'd just like to acknowledge your unfamiliarity with voice calls as a millennial. It's not something that is in my programming.
but
I feel like the lasting effects of COVID, for me at least, I feel as though I'm constantly exhausted much earlier in the day than I normally have been. I feel like I get much less distance out of a great night's sleep, which I, you know, am blessed to have fairly frequently. But I think that, well, firstly, I had absolutely no idea how much I touched my face prior to the pandemic. And so I think that, you know, that first instance being what I would consider a negative consequence, I think that a positive lasting effect is just I'm much more acutely aware of the micro impressions that I have and can have on my surroundings and my environment just with the smallest gesture.
What do you mean by that? Give me an example.
I just mean being more aware of how I am interacting with even the most mundane things, like how I am holding a door open for somebody and making sure to, you know, be sensitive to the fact that they may have a little bit more rigid understanding of personal space than the person that, you know, came before them. And so I find that I'm more aware. I'm just more dialed in, I guess you could say.
Jordan, thank you for that call. Richard Friedman, a lot there. But one of the things is that obviously Jordan has actually had COVID and is still feeling the health effects of it. What do we know about the physical and mental effects of long COVID, or people that had it and now still have effects from the disease?
Well, we know it's a huge problem that affects many millions of Americans who were infected with COVID, who are over the acute infection, but then have long-lasting medical and neuropsychiatric effects, including things like Jordan is saying, fatigue, disrupted sleep. And while we have some idea that it has to do with an overactive immune system that's playing out in various systems of the body, we don't actually know, you know, really what's going on or how to treat it. And it's a target of an enormous amount of research that's being funded to try to understand this, but it's a huge public health problem.
Let's go to Katie in St. Louis. Hi, Katie. Welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi, nice to see you. So I am a nurse. I was a nurse during COVID. I worked bedside. I took care of COVID patients. Since then, my career has actually taken me in the path of virtual care. So the lasting effects that I felt from COVID is how it has propelled the healthcare system into really incorporating virtual care and telehealth into maybe not daily activities yet. It's still, as much as COVID has propelled it forward, it's still pretty new and evolving, but it's really exciting to be a part of it and how virtual nurses and virtual patient observers in the hospital, but also just the regular person using telehealth appointments to see their doctors from home and get prescription refills. It's really interesting to see it develop, and it's really exciting to be a part of it, and really nerve-wracking as well to when we start talking about AI use in the workplace and, you know, what are the pros and cons, and we have to be really careful about, you know, taking these steps forward because patient safety is paramount, of course.
Yeah.
So, and there is a limit to what you can do virtually. It, you can't replace, you know, a nurse or a doctor's, you know, healing touch and presence. So it's a balance, but it's really exciting to get to be a part of it.
Katie, thank you. Diane Swank, what do you make of that, the change in the healthcare business and industry? And I'm sure there are many other industries that have changed dramatically because of COVID-19.
Yeah, and well, you know, I had my own personal experience with this because I had 13 surgeries during COVID. So I know it only too well, both virtually and in the hospitals. But I think one of the things that's really important is healthcare in this country, the demand for healthcare, and we talked about it with mental health, but we're chasing a moving target. We have aging demographics. We have people that are retiring, but with aging demographics, you have more people with aging diseases. We also have long COVID, and we have millennials, 12,000 a day, turning 35. And many of those millennials are now having families, and they're also utilizing the healthcare system. And it's really just slammed the healthcare system with demand at a time when we need to scale up. And so the idea of being able to leverage virtual is part of the answer, but it really does underscore the mismatch between the number of healthcare professionals and the demand for their services. And we talked about it in mental health, but it really spans a whole spectrum, and it's showing up in inflation. I mean, you know, medical care costs are going up, healthcare premiums are going up. We're also seeing a lot of hospital costs are starting to finally catch up to those earlier cost pressures that were felt as a result of COVID. And that's part of the inflation problem as well. But it's that, you know, that collision between, or the gap between supply and demand that causes that heat. And it really is hard because you're seeing long queues. People can't even get into a doctor. Their regular doctor, if they've got a cold, the waiting time can be enormous, you know, and those are the kinds of things you want to see more solutions to. And I think we are seeing more solutions, but at the moment it really is a mismatch. And I'm sure Richard has seen that, you know, more firsthand.
Richard, briefly, your thoughts.
Oh yeah. I think on the one hand, telehealth was a godsend, and we discovered something that we should have been doing long, long ago. And in part, not only because it extends the reach of what we can do, but there's such a maldistribution of resource, especially when it comes to mental health.
Tolliver, you know, one way to process grief and the COVID grief that Richard was talking about is through humor.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it can take a while. Here's a clip from Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the great Eric Idle telling people to bring out their dead as he walks along with a cart of bodies in the midst of a plague.
Bring out your dead!
Here's one.
Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What?
Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead. There. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not. He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. He'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't take him like that. It's against regulations.
I don't want to go on the cart.
Oh, don't be such a baby. I can't take him.
I feel fine.
I'm so happy that we were able to play that clip on the show.
That's amazing. I've never heard that.
You've never seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
I haven't.
You've got to check that out, Tolliver. You've got to check that out. And by the way, if you do go to our website, listentothemiddle.com, you can also make a contribution to The Middle, which is really important to us as we try to do our shows every single week leading up to the election and head out on the road. And by the way, we're going to be in St. Louis at St. Louis Public Radio on May the 9th. We're going to be in Connecticut in June. We're going to be in Alabama in July. So we're doing all this stuff, and the money really does help. So any amount tax deductible, listentothemiddle.com. And we'll be right back with more on The Middle.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We're asking you this hour, are you still feeling the effects of the COVID pandemic in your health, your work life, economically, in your relationships? You can call us at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or you can reach out at listentothemiddle.com. We're joined this hour by Diane Swonk, chief economist at KPMG US, and Dr. Richard Friedman, a psychiatrist and director of psychopharmacology at Weill Cornell Medicine. And let's go back to the phones, and we'll go to Thomas in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Thomas. Welcome to The Middle.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I, like many people in Nashville, am part of the live event industry. And as you can imagine, gathering large numbers of people in one place was one of the first things to get shut down and one of the last things to come back. So on top of the traumatizing mental image of just not knowing when we can come back to work, ever since COVID, just been like a sprint to catch back up, because when venues were open back up, the floodgates were open, and just there was a massive thirst for live entertainment, which is great, but so many people left the workplace, and we've just been trying to play catch up ever since.
Yeah. And have you had any success in doing that at this point? Are you feeling good about it now? Or are things moving in the right direction?
Things are certainly moving in the right direction. It's just throttles wide open. It seems like we can just almost never catch up. I mean, again, a lot of people took this as kind of an omen to retire or to move to a different industry. So there's just a massive labor shortage, just like many other things. But again, the demand was just came back in such fury that I don't think anyone was really anticipating that.
Thomas, thank you. Richard Friedman, on that issue of people deciding to take this moment to retire, there are probably many other people who also took this moment to get married, get divorced, take a look at their life and make a big change because of COVID-19.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the effects, I think, of COVID was people who ordinarily wouldn't have spent as much time around one another, spouses, were suddenly stressed by the constant presence of their significant other, for better or worse. Some people got closer. Others had a dissolution of their relationship. So that's not surprising.
Russ is in Idaho. Hi, Russ. Welcome to The Middle.
So I'm a professional biologist. And one of the most upsetting things about COVID was
the misinformation and the fact that the science was not listened to. And it became so politicized that, you know, the country was polarized. And to me, you know, what is more of a common enemy than a virus that kills you and your family and your neighbors? So that was extremely upsetting to me, the misinformation. And mm-hmm. I also think that the former administration did a very poor job informing the public and listening to the science. And, you know, probably thousands of people died that really wouldn't have died had better information been shared with the public. So that continues today. You know, the lack of listening to science, not only on this issue, but other issues. So that yeah. is still very disturbing to me.
Russ, thank you. And Richard Friedman, that actually just brings me to a question I have about the politics of this. We know that it's made it more difficult for people to talk to those that they disagree with this pandemic. It's made our divisions worse.
Yes, we're a highly polarized country in which, you know, people who have different views than we do are not just seen as interesting and quirky, and we disagree with them, but we demonize them. And what Thomas is saying, I absolutely agree with. You know, if you don't have a shared reality, it's very hard to communicate with people. And we all are in our own bubbles, surrounded by information that we select that agrees mm-hmm. with us.
That's the reason why we have this show, The Middle, so that people can meet in the middle.
Yes.
Diane, were you going to say something there?
Oh, yeah. There's been some research on with the Bipartisan Policy Institute in Washington and University of Maryland, and on some of the thorniest political issues, from Social Security to immigration to the deficit. They've taken people and of extremes on the political spectrum, put them in a room and said, these are the facts. And so they have one set of facts. And in that room, they get overlap with 80 to 90% of the solutions. The problem is we don't get in a room and talk with each other. We spend too much time talking at each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that in this world, in this day, in this moment, that, you know, are issues that are really tough politically and have become highly politicized, that can happen. That gives me hope. But it also means, you know, spending a lot more time talking to people as human beings. And I know I spend a lot of time in my speeches and what I do and when I'm in public, I spend a lot of time trying to identify with people as human beings, not just an economic statistic or not just talking about the stats, but, you know, what is their kids like? What is their life like? What are they feeling right there? And try to lean into that moment, because that's a shared moment, and then, you know, can be something bigger mm-hmm. than just sort of feeling separated.
Let's go to Nan in Minneapolis. Hi, Nan. Welcome to The Middle. How is COVID still affecting you?
Hi. It's affecting me greatly. I've lost jobs. I can't get Social Security benefits. That is a big problem. I've gone to every doctor appointment possible, and it's just really hard.
You're looking for Social Security disability benefits or Social Security benefits?
Social Security disability mm-hmm. benefits. And it's like nearly impossible because they don't have the, you know, I got it right away. And it's ruined. Yeah.
And this is because you had COVID-19 during the pandemic.
And yeah. And exactly. And I have long haul COVID. And because in the beginning they said, you know, don't come in unless you have lung issues. And I didn't have lung issues, but it took it out of me for 3 months. And, you know, and then I was a makeup artist and I lost all of that. So because no one was getting married or having any social.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. And I feel for everyone.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Nan, but thank you very much for calling in to the show. And let me go to Mark, who's in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. What about you? Welcome to The Middle.
Howdy. I'm a locksmith here, and I have this unique perspective. I opened during COVID, and I went out on my own for some reason, right, just as the pandemic started. And I've seen waves and the way people have changed their habits and everything. You know what I've noticed for the last 6 months or so is that fire hose that opened up when people first started to, you know, feel that relief after COVID it's just sort of ebbed. My events here, while they're still going, they're local people. The people that were traveling to see things, there's less of them. And so my business has ebbed a little bit along with them. You know, costs have gone up and all that, but I've also seen, like, just, you know, less out-of-towners, less folks from far away, less campers, less just folks just traveling for the sake of traveling. So people's habits of, I won't say return back to normal, because I won't say that quite, that's not quite what it feels like, but people have definitely changed and gone back to, I won't say before habits or new habits. It's an interesting change to me.
Yeah. Mark, thank you for that. Diane Swank, what do you make of that? What do you is that just about people not having as much money in their pockets now?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because the things like TSA throughput are running double digits above 2019 levels. So people are still traveling. But it is interesting as what's happening is each month, you know, in the employment data, they actually, we know that how many people say they are not in work that week because they're on vacation. And that's been hitting still record levels in recent months. What is also happening, though, is parental leave is at record levels. Now, that was expanded during the pandemic. Other things that are happening is people that can't get to work because of childcare or because of elder care issues. We're seeing more people who are getting marginalized because of what's not available to them to be able to have the support system to be able to work. And I think those are important things as well. Even down to something as, you know, it used to be sort of taken for granted. You got a job, you went and got a car, you drove to your job. Now, we're in big cities. Richard and I can take mass transit. But if there's not mass transit near you, you need a car to get to your job. Well, a car is now a luxury purchase. Only the top sort of two income quintiles can afford to buy a new car now. And car prices alone went from on average $38,000 to $50,000. So, you know, if you're going to get that car, it's, you know, only going to be one car now for a house. And that's going to limit. So there's going to be inequality again across where you see this, even though the overall numbers show it. There's, you know, the devil's always in the details, right?
Richard, I want to ask you about something that I found to be very interesting, which is apparently both former President Trump and President Biden are asking voters if they're better off now than they were 4 years ago. Both of them are doing that. But listen to this from an Associated Press story. Biden aides say their internal surveys have shown that voters tend to block out the pandemic from their memories unless they're reminded of it. And that when asked about Trump, they tend to think of the pre-pandemic years rather than 2020. What do you think that's about?
Well, I think that has to do with the nature of, you know, traumatic memory and forgetting. You know, what people remember is a biased experience. So if you ask people, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? They're not thinking of 2020. They're remembering a nostalgic period where things were better. They're not remembering the mortality, the social isolation, the, you know, the fact that we were all in lockdown, for sure. But if you remind them of that, I mean, that is the reality. Suddenly, they're not thinking that they were so well off.
Let's go to Roka, who's in St. Louis, Missouri. Roka, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, I, you know, listening to everything that you guys were just talking about, I'm just thinking about how, you know, 4 years ago in 2020, things were hard, obviously. But if you are a person like me who had COVID and is now suffering from long COVID, in a lot of ways, things are worse now than they were 4 years ago, if not only because of health issues, but also because a lot of these social supports for, you know, COVID and precautions have been lifted. So now as a disabled person, I am more isolated than I ever was because I'm having to protect myself from infection. And I am also now not really able to work in the same fashion that I once was. And yeah, it's really
and
hard.
And do you wear a mask still when you're out?
Yes. Yes, I wear a mask. Everyone that I am in close contact with also wears a mask whenever they're out. And even at this point now, when I spend time with my extended family, I'm having to wear a mask, which is really disheartening. So it's really just my closest friends that I can spend time without a mask on.
What about that, Diane Swank? I'll go to you on that because you said you had a number of surgeries during COVID.
Yeah.
What about the mask wearing? I mean, how does that feel now?
Well, it's interesting because I don't wear a mask as much as I did. My husband wears a mask more than I do, which is kind of interesting. I think he got used to wearing it around me because I had to be isolated and I had cancer from being in the World Trade Center on 9/11. So 20 years later, it came back in the middle of a pandemic. What was really hard for me is going into the hospital and waking up from a surgery in a mask and being alone. And all I had with me was my phone. And I would start texting or sometimes social media, tweeting, not realizing I was, I actually had one of my colleagues saying, someone take the phone away from her. Well, there was no one to take the phone away from me. And it was my only way to communicate. And, I'm not sure that was the best time to tweet about the economy or whatever as I was coming out of surgery. But, I was really struck by how much in the hospital, how much I spent time with other nurses, and I'm sure you had this experience, Richard, trying to be as nice as I could because they had to deal with people who would rip their masks off and yell at them and say, yes, we don't need masks. And they had COVID and they say, I don't have COVID, and trying to convince them that they had COVID. And it's really surreal. And I do, what I appreciate is when people can get on, I have to get on planes a lot. And I appreciate that people come on, some wearing masks, some not. And I don't see a lot of discord from that anymore. And I like the fact that people, it's okay if they wear a mask. To me, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I will say one of the things we know in the labor market is also from the disabilities. At first, people were looking at these numbers and they're like, oh, this is wonderful. Work from home has allowed all these people to work. Well, actually, it was long COVID was forcing many people to only work a little bit. And now we know that a lot of the working disabled, which was unusual in the past, people couldn't always work, mm-hmm. are actually because of long COVID. And it's positive if you can work a little bit, but it's not good if you're always isolated and you can't get out and do the most basic of human things, which I'm sure, Richard, you're very familiar with, mm-hmm. In terms of being able to socialize with people.
Yeah, Richard, your thoughts.
Yes, Diane, that's exactly what happened in the hospital, what you described. But when you were telling me just now about your experience with social media, it made me think, as much as we love to rail on about the harms of social media, and there are many of them, imagine where we would have been during COVID without it.
It kept me connected. Yeah,
exactly. It saved us. It is the thing that made it possible for us to virtually remain connected to one another during lockdown. It was remarkable.
Go ahead, Diane.
Oh, I was just going to say that. I mean, at one point in time, Richard and Jeremy, I was tweeting and I realized everything had sort of gotten to me and I'd gotten another diagnosis. And I said, excuse me, guys, I've got to take a pause on social media. And I actually just said, having a rough day, got to take a pause. Mm-hmm. And the amount of love that came my way from all these people, and I was like, this was really a wonderful thing. And I really appreciated that. Yeah. And, social media has a lot of downside, but there are some positives.
Some positives. We'll leave it at that. Diane Swank, chief economist at KPMG US, and Dr. Richard Friedman, director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Tolliver, the courts are back in the news with some very significant cases. The Trump trial in New York, the arguments about presidential immunity at the Supreme Court. Trust in the courts is near a low point.
Yeah, so we'll be asking, do you trust the court system in this country? You can call us at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353, or write in at listentothemiddle.com. While you're there, sign up for our newsletter.
So do you trust the courts? That's next week. And the week after that, we're live from St. Louis Public Radio on May the 9th. So don't miss that show. The Middle is brought to you by Long Nook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, John Barth, and Danny Alexander. Our technical director today is Steve Mork. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Haig. Thanks also to Nashville Public Radio, iHeartMedia, and the more than 410 public radio stations making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Talk to you next week.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.